and the NFL is already not terribly happy. So any reference to an actual NFL player was banned, though references to real players in other sports were okay. Eisendroth thought that was ironic, given that ESPN itself had covered the Taylor story. Even then, Shapiro pressed Eisendroth about the fictional drug addict on the team. Do we have to keep seeing that? Well, he is an addict, Eisendroth responded. He's going to get help, but it's not realistic to think he'll be cleaned up by episode 3. Shapiro agreed. By episode 6, one of the players was coming out of the closet, a process extending over 5 episodes. That's too much, Shapiro argued. Our viewers don't want to watch that. ESPN had held focus groups in which it tested the plot lines for all 11 episodes. Shapiro said no one was interested in a gay theme. Eisendroth laughed. You've got 15 guys, total strangers, sitting around. You're not going to get them to raise their hands and say, gee, I want more of the gay character. Shapiro agreed to 4 episodes focusing on a gay character. The new show, Playmakers, debuted on ESPN on August 26th. It was undeniably original and provocative. Eisendroth was impressed that Shapiro had the courage to put it on the air, and that Bodenheimer and ESPN backed him. It was also a ratings success, especially for cable, drawing an average of 2.2 million viewers, 5 times what ESPN had been getting for the time slot. Playmakers looked like a bona fide hit. And then, NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue saw a promotional spot for the show during ESPN's broadcast of an NFL preseason game. The spot showed one player in a crack den, another getting an injection, and 2 others hiding cocaine in the glove compartment of their car. Tagliabue picked up the phone and called Eisner. On September 9th, Eisner has invited me to join him at the weekly studio meeting, where the feature film slate is reviewed, budgets are discussed, and deals are proposed. In the wake of Nemo, Pirates, and a surprise hit, Freaky Friday, a remake starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan, the film division is heading toward a record $3 billion in revenue. After a disappointing 2002, this box office bonanza couldn't have come at a better time for Eisner. It has helped him blunt the ongoing criticisms from Gold and Roy and strengthened his hand with the board, demonstrating that he hasn't lost his touch and is precisely the kind of creative chief executive the company needs. The meeting I'm attending isn't where movie ideas are greenlit, which remains the prerogative of studio chairman Dick Cook and president Nina Jacobson, along with Eisner. Decisions like that are made in Eisner's office or Cook's in meetings to which I haven't been invited. Still, the key to the studio is in this room, Eisner tells me as we enter a conference room on the 2nd floor of the Team Disney building adjacent to Cook's office. Unlike prior studio chairmen, from Katzenberg through Roth, each of whom had an office on the 6th floor near Eisner, Cook has opted to keep his office on the 2nd floor with the other studio executives. Cook is in Toronto on this day, where Touchstone's Veronica Guerin is being shown at the Toronto Film Festival. Jacobson is in charge. When he is in town, Eisner attends these meetings regularly, and this week he congratulates Brigham Taylor on his recent promotion to senior vice president on the strength of Pirates of the Caribbean.